So for our second reading this morning, I have a poem for you called Magical Impermanence. It's found, hopefully, on your insert. This is a poem that was read by our Buddhist member at the Pittsfield Area Council of Congregations a few months ago, and it just has stuck with me ever since. And so I decided to make a sermon out of it. But there's a little catch, because it's one of these conversational sermons. So what I'm going to do is read the poem, invite you to read along, and then I'm going to hand out a microphone to the choir, and if one of our deacons in charge will be the microphone person for the congregation, I'm going to have a few questions as we kind of explore this poem together in light of our gospel lesson about being orphaned, and yet Jesus is coming as well. So here's the poem, Magical Impermanence. A pod of whales is swimming. A flock of geese is flying for 1,000 miles to the north. This migration happens every year. I have seen it so many times, cannot even count them on my fingers. In the distant past, when this migration happened, it was a sign that I was growing. Many promises awaited. A palm reader told me that a happy life was on the way. The astrologer predicted that adventure is my destiny. These days, when this migration happens, nature whispers to me, tells me it is a sign of my aging. An ancient rockfish in the water makes my life seem so finite. She quietly dispels my illusion of immortality. Don't envy her longevity. Living too long can be a curse. Soon, Mother Sea will hold my ashes with others. This picture of me with a youthful smile will fade. My name will be less mentioned in conversations. My little glories will be long forgotten. Any day can be the crescendo of my existence. Let me rush to pick up the apples. I'll make a nice pie. Loved ones will enjoy it. 2,500 years ago, a wise monk named Buddha declared, "All things are impermanent. Magic is only found in what is transient. Dew on the rose flower takes breath away. Waves on the sea make people fall in love. Evening sunsets invite us to the cosmic wonder. The full moon tonight lures us into rocking our body. Rainbow's beauty turns the earth celestial. I have a gift for you, a joke. Give yourself permission to laugh until your belly hurts. It's time for you to try new things. Have you ever jumped in the river with clothes on to be reckless and carefree? Have you ever run naked in the wild forest to feel the uncontrollable primal force? Have you ever traveled to see the northern lights to feed your devotion to the great mystery? Have you slept alone in the desert to receive nature's healing? Are you in the mood to dance in the white sand until you're exhausted in a bliss that can make your soul giggle?" Give you guys a... I'll give you guys this one. Oh, thank you, PM. So, let's explore this poem. So these texts together, the poem and the gospel lesson, take us into the very heart of God, take us into our own souls, and the soul, in a sense, that we share together. And the place to begin is with this business of orphans. So who are orphans? Who are orphans, generally speaking? When you think of orphans, who do you think of? Like those three little girls, right? So you think of children. Children are orphans, lose their parents, lose their family. But in the gospel lesson, who are the orphans?
The disciples.
The disciples. They're grown-ups, right? Yeah. But Jesus says, "I will not leave you orphaned." So they're grown-ups, and yet they're also losing their teacher, their master, their guide, their God. I remember so vividly when my mom died. It was one of my first years here, and I was 39 at the time, and one of the wise souls here said, whenever your mom or your parent dies, you become an orphan. And so orphans aren't just children. Orphans are all of us. Which speaks then to this impermanence. I mean, who set up a world where your parents leave one way or the other? Whenever they leave, it's very sad. And so impermanence is sort of the word, the abstract word about what? Sadness? Grief? Loss? Everything changing? Moving? And yet in this poem, which what a part of what I love is it doesn't go into the abstraction about impermanence as an idea. It uses images. So as I read this first part of the poem again, listen for the word sign. Sign. I want to ask you about that. A pod of whales is swimming. A flock of geese is flying for 1,000 miles to the north. This migration happens every year. I have seen it so many times, cannot even count them on my fingers. In the distant past, when this migration happened, it was a sign that I was growing. Many promises awaited. A palm reader told me that a happy life was on the way. The astrologer predicted that adventure is my destiny. These days, when this migration happens, nature whispers to me, tells me it is a sign of my aging. An ancient rockfish in the water makes my life seem so finite. She quietly dispels my illusion of immortality. Have you ever had those signs? Yeah. You want to say just say a word about those signs?
Get the laugh.
Your soul's already giggling, right?
Yeah. But of course.
But of course.
But of course.
Yes.
But it's okay.
Yes. Yes.
I think I've mentioned in front of people that I love mystery. I don't look for answers in mystery. It's a total mystery that what's going to happen when I pass away, but it's also a mystery how I ever got here. And somehow the mystery is very reassuring to me. It's very hard for me to believe about life after death. It's even harder for me to imagine how we ever got here. So if there is
That's
life
great.
Out of death, it's... I can't explain it, but
yes.
It's okay.
Yes. It's kind of like it's all blowing in the wind. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's okay.
Beautiful. And the thing I was caught in this was the flying of the flock of geese early in this poet's life was a sign of promise and possibility and new things coming. And then later in life, this same flying of the flock of geese is the whisper of nature that time is passing. Have you ever had something that's the same be a sign of one and then the other? Isn't that an intriguing image? I got working on that this week, and the one that came to mind is Mount Greylock. When I first came here, that mountain is there beckoning. And so come Monday morning, my day off, I would get up bright and early. I was raring to go. You know, I'm going to go climb Mount Greylock. I would get up there early. I would stop someplace for breakfast. And I would pick the longest trail through the hopper up and around Mount Prospect and Mount Williams, the whole thing up to the top by lunch, and then come down through Sperry Campground and down the other way. And I think it's 12, 13 miles. And it was just awesome. Now, I actually went up Mount Greylock this last Monday, but the way that worked was Monday morning dawns, and I wake up and I think, I should go climb this mountain. And another part of me says, slow down, Joel. Go eat your breakfast, do a little yoga, stretch a little bit. Maybe you need a little nap, which I actually did a little nap. And then about 10:30, I think, do I really feel And then this other part said, yes, that sounds good, but don't do that long one, Joel. Do the shorter one. And so that's what I did. And then when I came back, I needed a nap. And in all of that, there's the joy and the blessing of being alive. But also, I love that, the whisper of nature. I'm changing. My relationship to this mountain is changing. And I need to honor that and not just, because I've tried that, push, 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 and then I just collapse. And so I'm changing, and it's a time to honor. And so the flying of the geese or Mount Greylock or something in your life that you've been in relationship with all your life that stays the same, if you will, like maybe a vacation spot you go to. And then, and yet you've changed. That's what this poem is talking about. And it's a little, it's beautiful, it's a mystery, but it's also unsettling. I think the poet wants us to be a little unsettled, which we don't like, but let's go there anyway. And so then the poet says, don't envy her longevity, talking about the rockfish in the water. Living too long can be a curse. Living too long can be a curse. Have any of you thought of that idea?
Yes. Can I tell you something?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. My mother had a stroke when she was about 89, 90, and she shouldn't have been living alone, but she was for a long time. And finally, when it became quite obvious she wasn't all there, we had her come to Springside. And when she went into Springside, she wasn't perfect, but she knew who she was. And in the 14 months when she was there, I did a lot of grieving ahead of time, because first she knew me, and then I went in and she said, oh, Ruby, and she thought I was her sister. Mm-hmm. And I was playing a role I was unfit for, and then one day I go in, and she doesn't even remember having a sister, Ruby, mm-hmm. doing anything with her, and by the time she died, she thought she had just gotten out of Smith College. Mm-hmm. So I did my grieving ahead of time, and it's funny, I think of my father dying and having a heart attack and going the next week, and he died the way he was. Mm. And it's harder to realize that once my mother died, she was back being herself again. Mm. And when I see her next, she will be fine. Thank you.
This mystery of life.
Yeah.
Yes. And the idea of living too long can be a curse. I think of, for me, I've had a number of people not say that it's a curse, but that it's hard. And I remember a woman who lived at Berkshire Place when it was across the street, who was 97 years old, and she had 25 great-grandchildren. And she had two great-great-grandchildren. And the pictures on the walls, and it was just beautiful and joyous, and you might think she was just in her golden years. But at the very same time, she had outlived three of her five children, which just was such a heavy burden for her. Such a grief to outlive your children, and yet at the same time, have all these other grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And what I loved about her was, as complicated as that was, this like what Bing's saying in a different way, she had this spirit of acceptance, much like this line, these lines in the poem. Soon, Mother Sea will hold my ashes with others. This picture of me with a youthful smile will fade. My name will be less mentioned in conversations. My little glories will be long forgotten. Any day can be the crescendo of my existence. There's this quality of acceptance, which some of the saints of this church have really taught me about here it is, what am I going to do with it? It won't last forever. But then in the poem, there's something more that happens. Let me rush to pick up the apples. I'll make a nice pie. Loved ones will enjoy it. So what's that about in the face of this complicated, unsettling mystery of life? Go make a pie. What's the poet saying? Yeah, Jenny.
Enjoying it more.
Can you just repeat that just briefly?
I like to think of it as living in the present now and enjoying the moment. And my journeys are shorter and less strenuous, but I think I enjoy them more.
Ah, beautiful. Beautiful. Don't you think making a pie is kind of a nice image for living in the moment? Celebrating what's right there? And with this member over at Berkshire Place, I would come into her room and she'd be on the phone with a grandchild or a great-grandchild, and she would be giving them advice, listening to their story, being very engaged. Loved ones will enjoy it. And she wasn't giving them a literal pie, but she was giving them of herself in the moment. And then we'd talk afterwards, you know, and she'd have to do some of the grief and sadness around the losses. And I was so amazed how she could kind of shift back and forth and do both those things. And I thought, what a way to live your life.
Joel.
Yes. Oh, yes, Louise.
I've just had a terrible tragedy in my life, and yet nature is pulling me back. I had planted all these vegetables from seed, and there they were, and they had to be taken care of. So I'm out there in the garden every day with the joy of nature right now.
Making your pie, in effect. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Pam.
This is a little story about my dad and me. My dad, the short version is he made a video that I have, and it's Bruce Lane doing lots of different things, and one of them is making peach preserves. And one day, and that's my favorite one of them. And one day I was coming home from Albany in the summer and I saw peaches for sale. So I went, they're not going to be as good as Texas peaches, but I'm going to get some. So I got a few. And I was eating one on the way home and I turned around and went back because they were so good. And I got a bunch of peaches and I brought them home. And Daddy and I made peach preserves together. I would watch a little video. I'd do something with the peaches. And it was a way of remembering him and being part of him. You know, that was really wonderful. And
beautiful. So. Making a pie. Wow. So a wise monk named Buddha declared, "All things are impermanent." And then the poet says, "Magic is only found in what is transient." Sort of what Ginny was saying and others. "Magic is only found in what is transient. Dew on the rose flower takes breath away. Waves on the sea make people fall in love. Evening sunsets invite us to the cosmic wonder. The full moon tonight lures us into rocking our body. Rainbow's beauty turns the earth celestial." So all images, much like yours, of the magic. So what is this magic that the poet's talking about? What's magic?
Everything.
Everything.
I don't know what else to say. Well,
yeah, and somebody.
It would be if we let ourselves notice it that way, wouldn't it? And when we get these goals and things we think we have to do, or we react to something, and learning how not to react and just open our eyes and look, I think that's important, and I hope I get there.
When we look, we see something that we didn't realize was there.
And feel the joy and see the beauty without waiting.
Yeah. Yes.
It seems like the poet is saying that the changing itself is the magic. The fact of something changing is magical. That the transiency and then he gives the examples and it's true, it is. It's all those changing things that are the magical parts of it.
Mm.
The thing that kind of brings you into kind of opens your eyes to see what's actually around.
Thank you. Waves on the sea make people fall in love. The waves, you can't stop it. It's moving. It's changing. And it opens. Something changes. Sandy.
So often people say time marches on. Mm. And I think that that's so cold in a way. And the way this person wrote this, it's beautiful.
Mm.
And it's sort of subtle and dramatic in some ways, back and forth.
Life is full of magic. It's not just marching on.
You know, I feel that he's saying God gives us the mystery of the breath of life, and we need to enjoy all his gifts throughout our whole life, because we're here such a short time. And just what the other poet said, don't worry, be happy.
Spoken by Ed, who was here last Monday helping to unpack 8,000 pounds of food. Thank you. Well, thank you all. Now, there's one last part here. The poet just keeps going, sort of like John, keeps going around and around, going deeper and deeper. And finally, the poet says, I have a gift for you, a joke. Give yourself permission to laugh until your belly hurts. It's time for you to try new things. Have you ever jumped in the river with clothes on to be reckless and carefree? Have you ever run naked in the wild forest to feel the uncontrollable primal force? Have you ever traveled to see the northern lights to feed your devotion to the great mystery? Have you slept alone in the desert to receive nature's healing? Are you in the mood to dance in the white sand until you're exhausted in a bliss that can make your soul giggle? Can you feel some of the energy in the poem, how it started kind of with this, you know, regret and the change and the geese flying, and now there's this wind, fresh wind blowing. What is it that makes your soul giggle? Is it the sense of connection, of the union that we all share deep down, the secret of life, of faith, of the universe, that we all have these different experiences and yet we all share them? Is another word for magic grace? And that wonderful line, grace is everywhere, if we'll see it? Well, I want to close with kind of going back to the gospel, because John, in this passage, is talking about a surprise. You could call it a joke, where Jesus says, guys, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm going. And they're orphaned. And he says, oh, you won't be orphaned. I'll be with you. And it's like, they don't really quite get the joke, get the surprise. And yet the message of the whole Easter season moving into Pentecost is that there is this great surprise. Jesus is gone, and yet God and Christ and the Spirit are here. We're not alone. So keep your eyes out. Look for it. There's the adventure. There's the energy. It's here. Where? Where's Jesus? So let me close with my little story about when I saw Jesus. I was at St. Joe's Kitchen a week ago Wednesday. I'd come from a meeting. I got to St. Joe's late. I got my dinner because trustees was beginning at 6. I'm sitting out in the hall while they're cleaning up with the mops and all. And the pantry is in session. And so people have gone through the pantry and there's some folks on the other wall looking at clothes. And I'm sitting there eating my dinner and a couple people talking to me. And there's a mother there who's been through the pantry. She has a wrapping with a baby. And then there's a little girl with her who's like maybe 7 years old who just kind of was kind of this size. And she doesn't see me, and I'm listening to somebody else talking, but I have my eye on her because she's checking out the book table, which wasn't open, so it had the tablecloth over it. But she lifted the tablecloth up, she's looking at the books, and she picks out a book, a little picture book, had words in it, about planets. I could see it about planets, because it was one of those old folded like this. And she came and stood against the table about 10 feet down from where I was. She didn't see me at all, and I'm still eating, getting ready for trustees, another meeting, and listening to the person talk and talking, and watching her out of the corner of my eye. And I watched her lips start moving as she's turning the pages. And then, this is serious, true. I watched her, in effect, just disappear. She was enchanted. You could just see her go into this book, become enchanted, just kind of, she was in a different place. And just to see that magic in a child falling in love with words in a book where the words aren't words anymore, they're a doorway into something else. I could just see that. She looked so absolutely angelic. And I just thoroughly enjoyed that. And then realized that somebody was giving me a message. Because I'm getting ready to go to trustees. It's been a busy week. The church, you know, trustees were always trying to keep this big old place glued together, try to make up, you know, we never have enough money. There's always these decisions and these choices, and we don't actually have a whole lot of youthful leadership anymore. And so I'm getting ready for trustees and feeling like maybe a little tired. And all of a sudden, I see this little girl, and I have this sense Holy ground has just opened here in this room. While people are mopping and cleaning up and putting away food, something grace-filled, wondrous, magical, beautiful has just happened, and nobody saw it except me. At least they didn't see it. Man, who knows? Maybe somebody else did, but I did. And it just caught me of, well, what is this church thing that we're doing? Are we really trying to balance the budget or keep this all going for another 150 years? Or is it magical impermanence? That we are here to make a sacred space for moments like that little girl to happen. And that'll never get into an annual report or a fact or figure somewhere. But in my life, I have a few of those moments happen to me as a kid that absolutely saved my life. And who knows, could that have been one of those for her? And so I went to the trustees meeting feeling rather energized. And it made me think of this poem, Magical Impermanence. Go make a pie. Go have an adventure. And is that energy, that magic, that grace, that look on her face, is that the energy that created the universe? Is that the holy energy from the very heart of God that we call the Big Bang that gets incarnated in us? The mystery before we're born, the mystery after we go. What is all that? What an adventure. I think that's what the gospel's about today. Amen. Oh, well, Sarah, one more word.
I also think that it's time for us to go out and try something new that we've always wanted to do. Go out and do it. My daughter and I, we try to find places to enjoy together every Saturday morning, and we came upon this place in Goshen, and we walked in and we looked around, and then when I turned around and looked, there was a big sign saying it's $10 to get in. Ooh! But we walked around, looked at it. The more we walked, the more we looked, the more fascinated we were with the place. It was worth every penny of it. And go and do it if you think, gee, I think I'd like to explore this a little bit. I think I'd like to do this. Go do it. You'll be happy that you did. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Good word for the end. Go have an adventure. I think that's what the Spirit wants us all to do. Amen.